live from the Gator Rescue Hospital in Pismo Beach, Arkansas. It's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes of tell-all, hard-hitting, no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and all-too-dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your host, the first banjoist for the New York Philharmonic, the legal representative for the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, retired statesman, and a man who speaks of the pompousness of love, Richard J. Ringhausen. And you ready for it? Marksman, sculptor, six-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion, winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, and a man who can really sniff his snuff, the star of your show, Alan Ringhausen.
Hey. Does my clap sound tinny? Sound like I got metal hand?
To you?
Maybe.
You have sniffed snuff.
I'm loaded with iron. Sniffed snuff. I have sniffed snuff. My preference was raspberry snuff.
You know, that just seems something like a dandified English fop would do.
Dandified English fop. Okay. I don't even know what that is. I know of a Yankee Doodle. Dandy.
Yeah. Kind of a dandy, is it?
Kind of dressed up dude.
Yeah.
From England. All proper.
Yeah, like back in the day when
sitting up straight.
Wearing like those
dressed to the nines.
Those paper collars that were like a big horse collar.
Right.
And discussing playing cricket and things like that.
Jolly good.
Yeah, jolly good.
Okay. You know, we were in England.
I didn't see anybody doing sniffing snuff.
I didn't see anybody sniffing stuff, and I didn't see anybody that I'd say, well, look at this dandy. Did you see anyone like that?
I didn't see any dandies while I was there.
Okay. Just want to be clear on that. What did you do?
Oh, what's
here?
Today's episode? It's the Bermuda Triangle.
This can't be true.
I mean, it can't be true.
67th episode?
Yeah.
That can't be true.
Well, it's a lie, but...
Well, back when we hit episode 52, why didn't we have a one-year celebration?
We can go back in time and do that.
Okay. Bermuda Triangle looks like a... Oh, I see what's going on here now. It's got... Like the right arm, he's got the guy, his opponent, face down on the mat, and he's got his right arm pulled back behind his back like a chicken wing, and then he has his opposite leg, left leg, bent up to where the arm and leg are almost touching.
And it makes a triangle.
Yeah. Looks painful.
I assume it is painful.
Yeah.
You know, that's the point of wrestling holds, aren't they?
Painful?
Yeah.
You know, when I was in wrestling, and I look back on it now, and I could have done so much more.
Like win?
Winning would have been a novelty.
But I kind of remember going to watch some of your wrestling matches.
Just get them walking out?
Well, it didn't take long.
No, you had to pay attention.
You had to go in, you know, and they were over in just like 20 seconds or so.
Some of them, yeah. Some of them went longer. Not many.
You never did master the crane technique, though.
I did not master the crane, but I'm thinking, if a kid today, if I went to a high school wrestling match and some kid lined up on the line at the start of the match and did that crane thing like the Karate Kid did,
yeah.
I would cheer for that. Even if he lost in 20 seconds, I would think, man, he had the guts, the chutzpah to do that. That's pretty cool.
You pronounced that word correctly. And it doesn't pronounce like it's spelled.
No.
Chutzpah.
Yeah. I'm even the wrong religion to be doing that.
Okay, you have kids that went to high school. Julia and the other one.
Yeah.
And they were they in events in school, any of them?
Oh, God, yeah.
Like what?
Well, mostly Julia was in like school plays, and she was in, you know, like choir, and we would go.
So you went to those
things.
We'd
go to a lot of recitals, a lot of plays, and things of that nature. I think the other one was in track a little bit, and we went and watched a few track meets.
Okay, they're graduated now.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like a cylinder. Graduated cylinder. That's a little joke.
Not much of one.
Okay, my question is, have you been to any sporting or any sort of event at the high school since your children have left?
Oh, no.
You're not one of those guys who goes to all the football games, even though he doesn't even have any kids that were ever in high school, but he played back in the day, so now he's just sporting the team.
No, but I stayed kind of familiar with it because I was still working at a radio station and was running the production. Running the production equipment remotely. I mean, I was actually at the station operating the equipment while the games were going on. But so you kind of had to pay attention to what was going on. So I understand, you know, high school sporting events.
But not enough that you ever actually drug yourself to watch another game after you left high school.
Not yet.
Other than your kids.
No.
Just checking.
You? What have you ever gone to? Nothing.
No, when I was in Calhoun as state's attorney, I would go to football games.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. But that was, you know, mandatory. You were campaigning more
than
anything else.
That was political penance,
right?
Yeah.
All right. Now, I did go to college sports when Julia was in college, and we went to like homecoming.
Oh, isn't that nice?
But it was more, it wasn't to see the game, it was the experience. You've been to a college town on football. Didn't you go to a Notre Dame game?
I did go to a Notre Dame
game. Then you
Brad
know
and I went to a Notre
all
Dame
the pomp game. And circumstance, oh, yeah, associated with a college event.
Yeah, they had
it was just wild.
Like the parking lot thing that they have. The tailgating.
Oh, I mean, insane.
It was an amazing thing. And, you know, these people stake out their spots that they go to for year after year after year in exactly the same spot. If you were idiotic enough to show up and try to take someone's spot, it'd be a fight.
You know the weird part about this whole tailgating thing?
Yeah.
They don't go to the game.
No, a lot of them just stayed out through the whole...
They have their own big screen TV that they set up in the spot where they're tailgating. And then they don't go to the game.
We're walking down the aisle. Brad and I are checking this out before the game. And, of course, I don't drink, but Brad does.
And your share.
And as we're going down, he strikes up a conversation with someone who offers him a beer. Now Brad has cracked the code that he can get beers from people by giving him the, this is my first time here speech. We immediately went and bought green Notre Dame t-shirts. I mean, he knew how to sell the product.
Oh, so you guys are from Potosi? I got a second cousin in Potosi. Oh, yeah, we used to hang out a lot. Well, yeah, I'll take a beer. And just, you know, that kind of.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Brad did not buy a beer all day.
Nah, he's dangerous.
He just worked the tailgaters.
As well he should. Okay. Did he come back home with you, or did he just stay there?
He should have. Okay, before we go on to topic, I want to go back one more time to think. Now, in high school, I never went to prom. Did you go to prom? You never went to prom, did you?
No one asked me.
Me neither. But you had daughters. Did daughters go to prom?
Yeah, they did.
My daughters did, too. Now, did you go to the walk-ins?
We went to, by then, they would get together and there would be like a dinner, but it'd be like at somebody's house, but it was like kind of this formal process and you would go there and, you know, all the parents would be there and they'd all take pictures and go through all that business.
And you bit your tongue through all that, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I said nothing.
I remember going to those and sitting there thinking, what a colossal waste of time and money.
And effort. Yeah. Said nothing. You say nothing, right?
No, I didn't say a word. I just did now. But my kids are all
Did you turn to your wife and say, how much did we pay for this? How much did those shoes cost? That dress, what is that, hundreds of dollars? Why are we doing this?
None of these girls are going to marry any of these guys. Why am I ponying up like it's a wedding?
Yeah. Oh, proms, homecomings, all that stuff. It's exhausting to a parent.
I think the point of them, though, the point of them is that the school system is trying to teach social skills to the
school.
People.
I don't see where the school system had anything to do with all these extracurricular crap.
They did. They handled the proms and the
the prom
and stuff like that.
They hosted it. They gave them an edifice to dance around in. But they didn't, say, okay, now I want everybody here to go out to some ridiculously expensive meal, put on ridiculously expensive clothes, go through all this circumstance before you ever get to the building.
They know all that goes on.
Well, they may know it, but they're not promoting
it. What I'm saying is they're teaching these, teaching young people to be social.
Okay.
To have social skills.
Okay. And now you're saying that because we didn't go,
we
lack social
skills? No social skills.
Well,
yes.
They're probably right.
But, I'm thinking about my kids. They went to them. I don't think they have social skills either. I don't think it helped.
Let me think.
All right, this is just going to get us in trouble. Let's go.
No, it won't. They don't listen to this. They've got social skills. They turn it on, this is below my etiquette level.
All right. Topic, I guess.
As most people would.
You owned a boat at one time.
I did own a boat, and I don't remember the name of it.
Did you?
I really don't.
Did it have a name?
It had a name, and I can't remember it.
Was it the Drunken Staggering Sarah?
No.
Suzanne said I was absolutely not allowed to name our boat the Drunken Staggering Sue.
Really? Why not?
I don't know. I just thought it was a great name, and she wasn't drunk.
It would have got a lot of attention. I think people would have said, that's a great name for a boat.
The whole point.
Maybe even if you said that's an appropriate name for a boat.
The whole point of naming a boat is to draw attention. It's
absolutely.
It's like vanity plates on your car.
You betcha.
And I've got a list of, boat names. And you didn't name your boat.
It had a name already when we got it. But I can't remember what it said.
You didn't rename it?
No. That would have involved painting and, work. And I probably got it wrong.
Well, I got a list of boat names and similar. Here's one called Floundering About, which I kind of like that one. Or Bail Mary. Like bailing out the boat.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't get that, or that didn't...
I like Loan Shark. That's a good one there. Everybody spends too much money on a boat. And if you borrow money to buy a boat, you're in trouble.
Oh, there's no doubt about
that.
So
I like Loan Shark. That's a pretty good one there.
Let's see.
Peer pressure. I like that.
Flotilla the Hun.
Flotilla the Hun. Okay. I like peer pressure. That's good.
Now, here's one, that's...
Remember when that Volkswagen commercial thing was going on, and it was they had the process was Farfenugen.
Farfenugen.
Yeah, they had a boat down at the harbor that I operated was called Farfensinken.
And it sank anyway, right?
Mm, pretty much, yeah. Let me tell you something. You have a large boat sink. It's a disturbing sight. I mean, it's
I'm watching a big boat go down.
Yeah.
the big boats that sink in the ocean. Yeah. It's just so interesting, that like the Titanic or Bismarck, when big ships, when they go under, the final piece of it goes under. It's so interesting that here was something that was just a fantastic event, and it just vanishes. It's like
that's it.
Sea just takes it, and there leaves no trace other than the people floating around.
No, there's not even any skid marks. Just nothing.
Yeah. Roe versus Wade. Why? There's the legal issue, but that's kind of interesting, isn't it?
That is it, yeah. Calypso. Who had the Calypso? Who was the Calypso?
That was Jacques Cousteau.
Jacques Cousteau had the Calypso. There was a Calypso before that, wasn't there?
You're thinking of Harry Belafonte.
No, I'm not thinking about Harry Belafonte. The thought of Harry Belafonte has never crossed my mind while thinking about boats. But somebody else had a boat called the Calypso. It was before Jacques Cousteau. He named his boat after somebody else's famous boat. Like one of the early explorers had a boat named the Calypso. I'm pretty sure.
Marilyn Monroe.
I like that. The Jolly Roger. What's a boat name has been used? Can you use it again?
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, the Jolly Roger wasn't the name of a boat. It's the flag.
The name of the flag, yeah.
It's the Jolly Roger.
There's one. Boatwiser.
That's a good one.
Of course, you're not supposed to drink while you're boating, right?
No. Nobody on a boat ever drinks.
Did you know you get a BUI?
Oh, absolutely.
A boating under the influence?
Yeah. And I've seen a whole lot of people that should have gotten them.
You know, and it's interesting. I don't know if it's something about being a boat captain and drinking. You know, what was that line in Caddyshack? Never ask a Navy man if he wants
another drink. Another drink.
Another drink. A lot of these guys that get plastered, you know, back in my prosecuting days when I would have boating under the influence, they would, like, always want to fight the cops, too.
Well, yeah. A drunken captain's a fighting man. A fighting words.
Apparently. You know, they don't like being called out on it. I'm not as thinking you're drunk I am. That sort of thing.
You're right. And you got to be unshaven. Calypso was a person from Greek mythology who lived on the island of Agoglia. Whatever.
I thought you knew all that.
It was in Homer's Odyssey. Is where Calypso originated.
No regretsky.
That's a good one.
Peer pressure.
I already said peer pressure.
No, you didn't.
I most absolutely did, but reel this tape back and listen to it. I said peer pressure.
No, you didn't.
What did I say? I said something with peer in it.
I think that once I edit the tape, you're not going to have said that.
Okay. Boat meal. Oh, here's one that's spelled out B-E-R-T-H, which birth is a sleeping area. Control, birth control.
Nacho boat.
Okay.
Couples therapy. I'm not sure what's the point of that one.
Oh, this is a good one. Seize the day, but it's spelled S-E-A-S. Seize the day. Huh? Huh?
Basque kisser.
That'd be popular out, you know, like a smaller boat and pull up next to some other guys fishing. Yep. Hey, bass kisser! They call you that as the captain of your boat.
The sabbatical.
Sabbatical's not bad. Sink or swim. You always say sink or swim? No, you said Roe versus Wade.
I still like that. You just think about it. Boys will be boys.
Well, I'm not even going to do that one. Yacht you looking for? Huh? Is that too far?
Not as good as Nacho Boat.
Yacht you looking for? Boat full of noodles. Why would somebody do that?
I don't know. It's kind of interesting, though.
Well, Mai Tai. Mai Tai?
Yeah.
Huh? You like that one?
I saw one. It said endurance. I want to tell you. Do you know the story of the Endurance?
The Endurance?
Yeah.
I guess not.
Okay. Ernest Shackleton was a sailor who was, like, exploring the Arctic. You know, the guys that explored the Arctic.
Had warm clothes.
And mostly were idiots, I think.
Okay.
But Shackleton is going to lead this group down to the Antarctic, and he gets permission from Winston Churchill to do it because it's during the war. And the boat is called the Endurance. So they sail down to the Arctic Circle, right? And he's going to actually cross the Antarctic continent, assuming he can get his boat to the Antarctic. But he doesn't. He gets stuck in the ice.
That's a bad thing.
That is a bad thing. You know, so they get stuck in the ice, you know, back in, right off the snap, pretty much, when they go down. And, They leave in December of 1914. Right?
Well, is this the group that goes down and On their way to the South Pole, they meet another group that's already
discovered it. Oh, no, that's Amundsen and Scott.
Yeah, and the other guy and his whole crew freeze to death.
Yeah, that's Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
That's insult to injury to death.
Yeah, you get to the South Pole and the other guy's flag is already there. He's beat you. You're not the first guy to the South Pole. And then you're all going to freeze to death.
And then you freeze to death.
Okay. So they get stuck in the ice, right, in January 2015. And they decide...
When?
In January of 2015. Or 1915.
Sorry. Okay, okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
I was going to say they had cell phones by then. Hey, come get us.
At the end of February, stuck in the ice, they decide that they will just treat the ship as kind of a way station, and they're no longer just manning the ship. They're doing some hanging out around the ship. And they stay with the ship until October, when the ice crushes the hull of the ship. And it sinks in November. I mean, it takes a long time because it's stuck in the ice. But finally, it sinks. So for the next 2 months, Shackleton and his whole crew are stuck on an ice float, right? And they can't go anywhere. And they're going to hope that it drifts someplace where they can get off of it. And in March, they decide that... Their thing breaks in half, so they have the lifeboats from their big ship still with them, and it breaks in half. There's a little water, so now they take off and they head for land. It says after 5 harrowing days at sea, not counting the whole year they've been stuck in the ice, they finally hit a piece of land, but it's nowhere near civilization or near anything else. It's called Elephant Island, and they make land there, and they're still stuck for another couple months. So finally they decide that they will take an open boat, and the Captain Shackleton's going to pick 5 men and go for help and leave the rest of them there. Shackleton now is gone for another 3 months in April, and he finally reaches land in May. And then turns around, goes back in August, and rescues every single guy. Nobody died.
He really did it.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
You mean like those guys stuck there on the ice floe in August, or Elephant Island, wherever they were at, like, well, what do you want to do today?
I think I'm going to go sit out on the shore and watch to see if anyone's coming to get us. I mean, after you're stuck for like another 6 months, at what point do you say, you know, we've got to try to make a boat ourselves or a raft or something, you know? There's nobody died. Saved them all.
But you look around Elephant Island, and there's just like one coconut tree. And they're just all sitting there waiting for the next coconut to ripen.
You've watched these shows alone, right? The competition show alone where they take 10 people and they dump them out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And they
Put me on it. I was born to be on that show.
At the start of it, you know, you'll listen to their bios and they're all bragging about being wilderness experts and that they teach classes on how to stay in the wilderness. And they all get out there and starve.
Right.
Even the ones who really do know what they're doing starve.
It's tough, yeah. They lose like all their body weight, extra body weight.
What makes me wonder is like the Eskimos, you know, and the Native Americans, they had to have spent their entire waking day looking for food. I mean, it's just their life had to be looking for food all the time.
I think they referred to that as hunting and gathering society.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't like, I think today we're not going to hunt and gather.
Yeah, but I think they had a different mentality going into this than this TV show thing. The TV show, their only goal is to outlast all the others, whereas the people who were living there, you know, they had people before them who bore them and brought them into life that had a certain skill set that they were already dealing with. It's not like they were Adam and Eve and trying to figure it out themselves.
Yeah, but these people who are on this show are all experts already.
And not experts in the sense that you actually hunted and gathered for your life. I mean, they've never experienced that. They had all the modern tools and accessories and, you know.
Yeah, I once shot a bear.
Right. But they don't have all those tools that they teach survival with. Yeah. They got, you know, just some very basic stuff. But they're not going at it, I don't feel that. I think you have to go at it with the mentality that I'm going to live the rest of my life out here. That's how you have to go about it.
You know, when we watch that show on TV, my kids say that Uncle Alan is the one who could do that.
Well, yeah,
that
I am.
That we would have wagered on you being able to survive. I have a hard time imagining myself watching that show and having you sit there staring into the camera going, I'm so lonely. I just miss my family so much. I just think about them all the time. You know, being hungry and starving is really bad, but I just miss companionship, and I miss my brothers, you know, and they're just... I do not see you do that. I will say that.
I don't see myself as being a
dandified
sobbing, you know, weeping kind of around the fire guy. I'm thinking, tomorrow I'm going to kill and eat something. That's kind of the way I look.
Dandified fop.
The other thing the kids say is, you know, I think if Uncle Alan shot a rabbit, he wouldn't walk up and say, thank you, rabbit, for giving your life
your
to
spirit,
me.
Your spirit will enrich my life now.
They said you'd pick it up by the tail and go, whoop, whoop.
Dinner tonight.
Where's your dad?
How's eating good?
Where's the rest of your family?
Where there's one rabbit, there's 100. Where are they? Yeah. The question is some of these people will start eating weird things. I think just for the dramatic effect, you know, for camera, yeah. Anybody that starts eating stuff raw, they've gone over the edge mentally, I think. You're not going to stop cooking your food.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, these people on this show, you know, they know they're getting dropped off in some place that's going to be freezing cold, you know, and no food. Wouldn't you, as preparation, study what things you could eat?
Like, absolutely.
What kind of mushrooms and what kind of fish you can eat and what's safe.
What kind of roots you can dig up, what kind of bark you can eat.
Yeah.
Every single, you know, what kind of pine nuts and stuff, what is indigenous to the area. Right.
Yeah. And none of them apparently do that.
They, you know, like they have had people that, you know, tap out in the first day. I mean, they didn't make it one day.
Yeah, and they get, what, like $500,000 if they win the thing?
Yeah.
You know, what gets me is, you know, the people who tap out first, second day, you know when they're preparing for this, you know, they're filling their family full of a whole bunch of nonsense.
When we win this $500,000,
I'm going to buy
a new camper shell.
Some to my mom so that she can finally have a decent house to live in, da, 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 da. You know, and he's out preparing and learning to make fire.
Gave up his job, if he had one.
If he had one. And then, week later, here he is back. What are you doing back?
Well, I heard a guy out howling, and it scared me really bad. Oh. It's right outside my tent.
You know, it really makes you think, you know, there's things out here that will eat you.
Uh-huh. And there are.
Kids say you wouldn't do that.
No, well, you got to figure. You know,
the kids say the only
you've
person
got that weapons
would,
too.
The only person that would outlast you is me.
Uh-huh, right. They never said that. Your kids know us both, Rick. Nah. All right, so we got. Man, I was going to tell my harbor story.
Tell your harbor story.
I don't have time for it. It's 30 minutes or up.
I don't care. Tell it anyway. I'll clip some of the dead stuff.
We'll tell it next. It's a long story.
All right.
So I'll do it on the
next
show.
Episode. Yeah. Can't wait.
That's not about boats, but I'll tell it anyway then. All right. We're done here. We've done enough damage. We've scarred enough people for one night, Rick.
All right. Ahoy.
Ahoy, Polloy.
Rick Gator.
And Alligator. Bon voyage.
Bon voyage. That's what I meant. This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour is brought to you by Uncle Den's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Cannoli's Canine Cough Drops. If your dog's coughing, he's coughing for a cannoli. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Federation. With that legal in hand, see you later from Alligator and Rick Gator. This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network. Ahoy.